Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish the book I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. And today I'm going to be reviewing a book called The Killing Moon by N.K. Jemisin, an author who I've read a few books of recently in the Broken Earth trilogy. But this is not part of the Broken Earth trilogy. This is Dreamblood number one, which is a trilogy, I think a middle trilogy. So actually, I should probably have just looked at it here. Yeah, so N.K. Jemisin, she wrote the Inheritance trilogy and the Dreamblood trilogy and then the Broken Earth trilogy. And this is the first book of a series that I haven't tried out at all. I read the first book, or listened to the audiobook of the first book in the Inheritance trilogy, and mostly enjoyed it, but was kind of turned off quite a bit by a very uneven and misjudged audiobook narration. But otherwise it was pretty good, but it just didn't really feel like the kind of book for me or the kind of fantasy for me, even though it was pretty good. Broken Earth, we've talked about that quite a bit recently. I thought the first book was very good. The second book was also good. The third book I felt a little bit disappointed by. But overall, mostly a good series. Any issues that I have, it just did knock out my knock down my own enjoyment rating of it, but it's nothing that I wouldn't recommend to anyone. It's not a series that I would say, no, don't bother reading it or don't bother reading through to the end, because I think things that I didn't like about it, I think most people would be fine with, or you know, there's plenty of other stuff in there that you can enjoy. So here we go with the Dreamblood trilogy, which is the second trilogy. I guess she, N.K. Jemisin, mostly writes in trilogies. And this, the Goodreads blurb is this paperback, 418 pages. It was like about 12 hours as an audiobook. And The Killing Moon, published 1st of May 2012. I guess, yeah, so 2012... Literary Awards, Nebula Award nominee for Best Novel, nominee for Best Fantasy Novel at the World Fantasy Awards, and some other nominees. In the ancient city-state of Gujarat, peace is the only law. Upon its rooftops and among the shadows of its cobbled streets wait the gatherers, the keepers of this peace, priests of the dream goddess. Their duty is to harvest the magic of the sleeping mind and use it to heal, to soothe, and kill those judged corrupt. And so it's a fantasy series, book set in, it says, the ancient city-state of Gujarat. And the front cover of the audiobook here, yeah, 12 hours, 38 minutes, it says here, narrated by Sarah Zimmerman. And it's got the killing moon. There's a big moon above a city, kind of on some rocks. And I understood all the time that there was a desert, and then there was a valley and a river flowing through there, and the river is kind of all like long and winding, and I was like, oh, I guess kind of like some, you know, it goes out to some like an estuary, and it's like a slow moving river, and they say, oh, if you take the river it takes 10 days to get between this city and that city, but if you cut through the desert it only takes 4 days. So the desert route is a little bit more tricky, less luxurious, because you can't just take a barge, but there it is. And it was only when I actually looked here on the on Goodreads, I was looking over here because it was maybe a week ago that I finished reading this, and I was like, oh, let me just look up the names and see what some other people think about this. And someone said here, she has crafted a world set in a desert culture. This is Jenny from Reading Envy. I think Egypt, but on a different planet, with a magic system that combines elements of Egyptian medicine and Freudian dream theory. And to be honest, I didn't pick up that this was meant to be Egyptian-inspired, only until I, you know, kind of looked some stuff up later. I was like, oh yeah, I guess there is sort of like, you know, you get the death goddess and all these other kind of things. And the magic is based on different, what are the four humours of the body? The blood, the bile, the, what are the other? There's four of them. Anyway, so so, but you also get dream blood and dream bile and dream stuff. And these are kind of magic substances that can be harvested from bodies, and if you take too much you die and all that kind of stuff. But I know almost nothing at all about ancient Egypt religions and different cosmologies and things like that, except, you know, for the pictures of the masks that you see and the you know, some different statues of this and statues of that, and you see the hieroglyphs and things. But I didn't really pick up on that was what it was from the book. And I'm wondering if that is good world building, that I enjoyed the story enough as it is, but I do think there is a lack of world building in this book, which didn't really get in the way of the story so much. But, like, for a lot of the time, it's sort of like, oh, we're going to this place, and there's these things up the coast, and then we're going to this building, and there's a palace. So is it called a palace? And there's a king with 1,000 wives, and he's got his favourite wife, but then there's 1,000 others. And I never really tied it all together to work out that this is Egyptian-influenced. It just felt to me... like it was hiding the N.K. Jemisin's almost hiding the influence a bit too much. She didn't just want to say, look, the palace is like the Valley of the Kings, and there was some, you know, there's some pyramids in the background, but that was before, you know, pyramids from ages ago, you know, thousands of years ago or something like that. If there had just been a few more hints about what was going on here, or maybe the goddess has a head of a scarab, and this other one has a head of a fox, and this other one has a head of a cat or whatever, it would have kind of clued me in a bit more. Maybe I would have been able to use my own influences, my own knowledge, or the images that I have from ancient Egypt or fantasy kind of settings like that. No, not fantasy, real life settings, to kind of fill in the gaps that I felt were there in the fantasy settings. But maybe not. I don't know. It is one of those strange things. That is it a strength of the world building that it stood up without it, or was it too vague and I didn't quite pick up on that? So the setup is, yes, you've got these different characters called the Gatherers, and they go out and they, like it says here in the blurb, they gather the duty is to harvest the magic of these sleeping mind and use it to heal, to soothe, and to kill those judged corrupt. From what it seems, it starts off with someone failing to do this. The idea being that you can take their dream blood and their other dream substances, their dream humours, and collect them into the body if you're a trained gatherer. And then, in return for that, it does kill them, but in return for that, you make sure that their soul heads on into the good afterlife rather than to the annihilation afterlife or the bad afterlife. So you're sending people, get people straight to heaven, into paradise rather than into Hades, hell, limbo, whatever like that. So in exchange for living in this city of Gujra, like, there is peace and everyone is looked after, and if there's something ill, you go along to see the sharers. There's the gatherers and I think the sharers or something. The sharers will share with you some things and heal you and make you peaceful and all that kind of thing. Meanwhile, the thing that heals that, the reason you can be healed is that somebody else has given some of their dream blood as they've given their life. And, you know, kill those judged corrupt is the idea of being, it's like, it's not just if you're terminally ill or really old, you will be gathered. So it did make me think of a bit of all those stories which it starts off and you're like, oh, this is we're living in a utopia, and you're sort of like, oh, Soylent Green is people, and you realise the utopia is powered by the suffering of other people or the deaths of other people. So there was this tension there. It's like, is Gujra a good place, and are the gatherers good, or are they bad? Who are they working for? Meanwhile, it felt like that's what it was aiming for. Like, oh, is this a good system? Is it a bad system? Are these people doing the good thing to work within the system or the bad thing? As we sort of see some outside views. But there was never a moment where I thought, oh, this is actually going to end up really well. And again, as the story went through, maybe I was wanting a bit more complexity in this question of, like, is it okay to kill old people to make young people healthier? Because that's kind of what they kept on, that the characters kept on discussing and playing with there. And I was like, there is only really one way to make this sound good, or to make, you know, it's not only one way to make it sound good, but there's ways that this tension can work or not work. And I never really felt like that tension paid off within the story. In a way which was kind of disappointing, because it felt like at some point they were setting up, like, oh, there's going to be a really complex turn, and later on, again, I don't want to go back into it, it's like, oh, these people are actually working here, and there was too much effort going in there, and I was like, oh, this is going to really pay off, and then it's kind of dropped, and the main characters go off on a different adventure, but I was like, wait a second, that's the main thing, I don't know, I just felt like it was setting up a story which I thought there was going to be more conspiracy and more, like, unveiling of this, you know, really bad system, a really dystopian system, But in the end, it was sort of like, oh no, there's a bad guy over here that we're going to fight, and we need to fight out that, you know, fight that bad guy. And once that's solved, everything's solved. And I was like, but go back a bit. There's all these other layers that seem to be skipped over. Now, I do understand that this is the first book in a trilogy, and maybe that is played out throughout the second two books, or the, you know, the second and third book of this trilogy, and that those issues are kind of played with a bit more, but it felt a little bit wrapped up too neatly, and the things that we hinted at here, it either makes the people involved monstrous that they're going along with it, or naive, and I think there's a lot of naivety in here, but yeah, it's tricky. Again, it's just that how satisfying is it? What is the satisfaction level of the story? And it promised more than it delivered. However, I also think there's places to go, so if I do get round to reading on in this trilogy, if I feel like it, you know, if this sits well with me, and in a few months' time I'm like, oh yeah, let's check out the next book in this series. If I do that, I do see it has a place to go. I think if it had all been wrapped up in this book, maybe it would have been a bit too neat. Right, let's go back to Goodreads. What does it say here? Original title, The Killing Moon. Characters. Ahiru, Nariji, and Sundani. This is why I went over here, because I wanted to get some of these names and some of this terminology. Yeah, so you've got the master gatherer called Ahiru, and his apprentice, Nijiri. And Nijiri is like 16 years old, and Ahiru is the old one. And what my main thing that I really liked about this book is this way that Nijiri looks at his relationships, and you see this kind of like, it's a master-learner relationship, but it's also kind of, they call each other brothers, oh brother this, because they know that Nijiri knows that once he also becomes a full-fledged gatherer, they're going to be, you know, comrades in arms, so there's a very, you know, there's a kind of equality there, but there's also like a father-son kind of thing, because he's younger and Ahiru is like 20 years older, and then there's like this very close, intimate, not so much like lovers, but you know, there's a very close love relationship there, and I really enjoyed this playing out of this relationship between the young naive kid and the older gatherer teacher. A lot of it is based around the idea that in the first opening chapter of the book, Ahiru messes up one of these gatherings and is sort of like having to kind of pay for that in his own way. Like, you know, he's regretting it, but also there's some political fallout from it. And he has to do more jobs, and he doesn't have the energy because he also needs the dream blood and he didn't get it in that time. And this sort of like the old Jedi and the young Padawan learner. I just watched Star Wars yesterday, so that's kind of in my head. And you kind of go, oh, right, so, you know, the dynamic between the two of them. And then as it goes on, you realise that, oh, Ahiru has gone through this beforehand, because we also, you know, he mentioned his, you know, his master as well, and he's been through these steps and worked alongside his master. And now they're looking, they need someone to, you know, come up and replace another gatherer, because there should always be four gatherers, and they need some more going on there. So yeah, I think that relationship is the heart of the story, is what they do. They get together, they go on a mission, they've got to kill someone, and then they go across to another city, and we get the interplay of, oh, what is the view of them, and what is the view of Gajura in the next city over? Do they like that the gatherers are there? Another main character is the prince. I can't remember the prince, but he's the one with the 500 wives or the 100 wives and lots of children. And he's very much the Machiavellian villain of this, the conniving person in the background. Again, as he goes through, it's like, is he the main villain? Are there other villains, other places? Is he pulling the strings or other people pulling his strings? And again, this was one of the points where it was such an interesting character, or there was, for me, a lot of interest in this character and his view of the world. And this is one of the kind of things which always comes to me in these fantasy novels. Like, okay, if you do live in a fantasy world, and if magic does exist, and there really are gods, and there really isn't the way that it is, sort of like, what is morality in that way? And I liked the brief too shallow for me, like, the beginning of the exploration of, okay, if gods really do exist, what is morality? If magic really does exist and can cure this and can heal that, like, what is the, you know, utilitarian, best utilitarian outcome of, to, you know, to use this in the best way, for the most, the least suffering of, for the most people, and what is it worth to get to that point? It was kind of played around the edges, but in this case, it was a bit too, it quickly summed up. I was like, oh yeah, but he's wrong. So let's just go over with these other people. But an interesting, a fun character to spend time with. And this other character that we have here, oh, I've lost the character, Sundani, she is started off as an interesting character, but then almost disappeared for the second half of the book. She came along on a journey, but didn't really do much. She was kind of more of a, like a balance for these other characters. She's an ambassador from another city and is over here in Gujarat, and has a price put on her head. The gatherers are sent to kill her, and she kind of gets out of it. I don't want to spoil it too much, but she gets out of it, and then the rest of the book is kind of like her dealing with the idea, oh, I should, you know, maybe I'm not going to survive, and other people going, oh, well, you're going to be gathered, whatever happens, because when the gatherers are going to gather you, they're going to do it. So her journey is, again, starts out interesting, but it never really paid off in the second half of the book. And this isn't the first book recently. What was the other book that I read recently where it started off and there was this side character? It was called Autonomous by Annalie Nevitz. And there's this one character, in that case it was a pirate character, and it's sort of like, oh, cool pirate character over here. Yeah, okay, well, she's one of the main viewpoint characters. Right, let's follow along with her. And then halfway through the book, it's like these authors have suddenly gone, actually, these other characters over here and their relationship, that's really what the book is about. Okay, let's concentrate on them. But then this other character, in the case of Autonomous, the pirate character in here, Sundani, or whatever her name is, let's have a look it up, yeah. Sundani, it's sort of like, oh, I forgot that there has to be some payoff for her character, and she has to have a journey and do some stuff towards the climax of the book as well. And it, again, didn't really pay it off that well, unfortunately. But overall, I really did like spending time with these characters, and half of the characters were paid off really well, and the other half were interesting, but again, wanted a little bit more payoff. And I don't know, I really got that with N.K. Jemisin's first book in the Broken Earth series. I can't remember what it's called. I should look that one up too. The or was it just called The Broken Earth? No, what was it called? Broken Earth. Oh, I can't see. Whatever the first Broken Earth was. Oh, Fifth Season. Of course, yeah, the Fifth Season. So in the Fifth Season, all of those characters really paid off. And even in the second book in the series, they all paid off. And it's so great to see characters paying off in that way. And in this case, it didn't really pay off in the same way. Or 50% of the characters didn't pay off. And I'm not quite sure where those characters can go in the second book in this series. Overall, I've kind of been talking about this book as though, like, the things I didn't like, but all of these kind of things, it just, I don't know, this book is one that showed so much promise, and I'm like, N.K. Jemisin has obviously got an amazing book in her, and of course, that is the Fifth Season. That was the book that is kind of building to with these first two trilogies, or that's what it feels like going back to it. It's sort of like, all right, she got some good stuff going on in the Inheritance trilogy, although I've only read the first book. This book is sort of like, oh, the world building is getting there, but the world building has to be clarified. There has to be a bit more stuff, a bit more interest. It has to be either more different from Earth, or it has to be, you know, a bit more based in, I don't know, either more reality and reference those, you know, make those references stronger so we can pull the references in from our real world to fill in the gaps, or it has to be a completely new world and you've got to fill in all those gaps from the ground up. And that's what she does in The Broken Earth. And The Killing Moon didn't quite get there. And again, the characters are like, all right, you've got some good relationships here and you've got to pay all these off. And then in The Broken Earth, it does that. However, this book is not a bad book. It's just, I was just a little bit let down by the, as I put here in my review on Goodreads, I was a bit let down by the lack of complexity in the plot and its resolution. Maybe it gets more challenging in book two, ? So book two, ? Maybe. We'll see. But overall, I really enjoyed this book. And also, let me just look up the narrator. The narrated by Sarah Zimmerman, good narrator. I really enjoyed it. It's mostly male viewpoint characters, mostly male characters, but she did those really well. Again, it's one of those, I don't want it to be damning with faint praise that, oh, what she didn't do was try and do low voices for the main male characters, which is always a problem. But no, very good narrator, and I'd be happy to listen to her do another book. Unlike, as I said, the narrator of the first book in the Inheritance trilogy, which again I can't remember, oh, 100,000 Kingdoms, where that was somebody who was like, oh right, I've got to do a young voice. So she was just like, who do I know young? Ah, this kid down the street. And suddenly it's like, ah, oh, gee, man, gee, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, that's, I don't really want, I think I've mentioned in the review, like, if you're going to have young actors, have Joel Haley Osment from The Sixth Sense with a kind of like more measured something rather than what's his face from The Phantom Menace, young Anakin. It's sort of like, no, don't go for young Anakin, like over the top acting for a child, especially because in the Inheritance trilogy, or in that first book, this young child character was actually a god who was thousands of years old, and he was like talking like a, I don't know, it was just totally weird. And in this case, the voices are much more measured. So Sarah Zimmerman, a thumbs up there. Right, yeah, overall, I'm going to give this book 3 stars. It's not quite a 3.5-star book, a 4-star book, or 4.5, or whatever I gave The Broken Earth. Actually, let me go look back here. What did I, what did I have? 5th season. Oh, 4-star book, yes. And Obelisk Gate, what did I give there? Oh, I gave that book 2 stars. How did I give Obelisk Gate only 2 stars? I only have good memories from that book. Mainly it's because, I guess, a lot of the stuff was paid off in the final book, so I have fonder views of that. Anyway, 3 stars, above average, but unfortunately for N.K. Jemisin, she has surpassed this, and it's a bit weird to go back and listen to this, or, like, click into this book after reading The Fifth Season, which is actually just so much better. And let me have a look at some other friends. So Tudor rated it 5 stars. Excellent novel that works for me. Much better than 100,000 Kingdoms. Oh, reviewed that back in 2012. So let's see someone who's read it more recently. Oh, Julie Davis. The world building was much more interesting than the storytelling, which I could predict for the last third of the book. Yeah, it's one of those ways that I was like, oh, if this isn't going so good, I can predict this. So I hope she surprised me, and then didn't surprise me. Julie Davis. But after that, there wasn't much equal credence given to both sides of the philosophical argument, and the end of the book seemed like a cop-out to me. That is almost exactly that's almost exactly my thing. So I was like, oh, this is all good. Right, we're gonna see this both, like, there's gonna be a war between, you know, good and evil, but evil has a point, and there's some good stuff, and on the good side, they've got some real skeletons in the closet, and there's something over there as well. So maybe they're gonna come to a compromise, and in the end, it's all like, oh, no, they said it's gonna... Veer rated it 4 stars. Not as good as the Inheritance trilogy, and I had more difficulty getting into it than the first reading. Maybe because many of the point of views, but still good overall. I think that kind of sums up my thing. It's sort of like, yeah, good, it's okay. It's, I have issues, but still good overall. Yeah, so it's actually pretty highly rated. 3.86 stars on Goodreads in general, and a 3.88 average rating of Friends of Luke on Goodreads. So yeah, pretty good book, didn't pay off in a way that I was wanting. Right, what else am I doing? I think I've come to the end of the episode. I've did this completely without notes, and 22 minutes. Well, I guess another short episode. This is Luke from a few minutes in the future, when I opened my phone to take a photo of the audio, me holding up the phone. As you see, the album art of these podcasts is always me holding up the book or holding up the phone, showing it, or me, Juliana, talking about the book. And in this case, I was like, oh, let me open the file. And it started playing, author's note. And I was like, oh, yes, I skipped the author's note at the start of this book. And often because the author's note, or there's like a preface or something, now a note from the author, and it's often written ages back and kind of assumes you've already read the book in some cases, or it's sort of like, oh, this is the foreword written by this other author about this, and it's sort of like, yes, this is a very important book because of this, and I was like, I always skip that just because it kind of taints my enjoyment, or kind of, it's not even about spoilers, like, I want to go in cold and just let the book speak for itself. Here, N.K. Jemisin pretty much spends 2 minutes saying, what I've done is I've kind of removed as many references from these ancient Egyptian stories that I'm talking about, and I tried to keep the name sounding kind of ancient Egyptian, but not really, and I'm sorry if I've offended anyone, and I'm like, oh, that's exactly what was missing, this is exactly what, because I skipped the author's note, the whole idea of this being really clearly something about Egypt. She tells me outside of the story of the book. She's even saying, yeah, this is about Egypt, but I don't, just put it aside. It's tricky because I don't want to rely on those stories. I want to be influenced by them, but I don't want to reference them too closely. And it's like, all right, so it's explain the book. Maybe if I'd have listened to the 1.5 minutes of N.K. Jemisin saying, oh yeah, it's about ancient Egypt, but don't think too closely on that. I'm using it to influence me, but not too strongly. Maybe I would have got it and enjoyed it a bit more. Anyway, there's Luke from a few minutes after recording the podcast. I don't often edit it, but that was so clear. That's exactly my main complaint, or one of my main complaints about the book. It doesn't mean I enjoyed it anymore, because I think that there could have been a way of doing that within the text of the book, rather than just an author doing a director's commentary about it. But who knows? Anyway, I thought that was interesting enough to come back and edit into this podcast 2 minutes after pressing stop. The next book that I'm going to be reading is... reviewing is, I've got Paradox Bound by, it's called Paradox Bound, a novel by Peter Kleins, and I've gotten about 50% of the way into that, and suddenly what started off as I thought was going to be an interesting book has just become just tedious and pathetic, and I'm not quite sure if I'm going to finish it off. So maybe it's one of those ones, it's one of those books I was like, yeah, I might as well finish it off because I've got it downloaded and it'll make an interesting podcast to talk about it, but it's not bad enough to give any good rants about it. So I'm just like, well, I'm just not enjoying this book very well. I'll see if people on Goodreads think it's worth continuing. I can't even remember who recommended it to me. So that's the next book. I'm also reading The Caves of Steel by Isaac Asimov, and me and Juliana will see if we can review that, although I am in South America, in Lima, in Peru at the moment, and she's back in the UK. Maybe we can get on Skype and we can record that via Skype, or maybe I'll just read it, we'll review it once I get back to Berlin in January. Otherwise, that's it for me. You can follow me on Twitter, I'm at Luke Burridge, become my friends on Goodreads, and I can see what you think of the same books that I'm reading. You can follow me on Instagram and YouTube and all these other kind of places. Also, check out sfbrp.com if you want to get the archive feed going all the way back to episode number 1. And you can also check out the episode list where you can see every single book that I've read and reviewed, along with the ratings, the series the book is in, you can sort by author or length of the podcast or date of the podcast, and all that kind of stuff. So I hope you check that out too. sfbrp.com does have some stuff that you can, resources that you can find there. So that's it from me. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.